This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey everybody, Jason here. I've got Dr. Dimitri Kapalianis from the University of New Mexico Center for Sales and Business Development. Dr. Dimitri, let's talk about the future of sales. Are you ready?
Let's do it, Jason.
All right. And it's funny because I'm saying the name of your program. I think one of the things that's fascinating, and I pointed this out in part one when I was like introducing you, is it's the Center for Sales and Business Development. Kind of goes back to what you said in kind of like the journey and the story to get to it, which is a lot of people graduate with, let's say, a business degree, and then they go into business development, which is not business, right? It has nothing to do with business and the kind of classes they teach you at business school. It's sales, it's lead generation, right? So I love the fact that it's the Center for Sales and Business Development, which is where people are going to go out to. When we look at that, what do you see buyers, let's talk about that, wanting more of or less of from salespeople in the future?
More of help me solve my problem, less of send me 10 cold emails on that cadence where you're bugging me, like you're replying all to your own email 10 times. And hey, just checking in. Hope you had a minute to read my email. Can I get 5 minutes of your time next week? No personalization, no customization, no inclination at all that you even know who I am. It's just this totally automated cadence. And so as we kind of think a little bit about technology and sort of foreshadow some of the things that I want to talk about, why do we get those terrible cadences in kind of the cold outreach? We get them because the marginal cost of doing so for the person doing it is basically zero. It costs me nothing to do it. And so if I send out 10,000 of these horrid, horrid, horrid cold emails, no customization, no personalization, even if just one person responds, I'm getting a positive ROI. And so I think there's going to be this really interesting clash and tension between what buyers want, which is I don't want that, and what sellers are going to be inclined to do because of the economics, which is, yeah, we're just going to put out a bunch of this zero marginal cost stuff and hope that something sticks. And so there is a way in which the future of sales looks a lot more like irritating your buyers. Howard Dover has this, like, this is really Howard's key pitch, Dr. Howard Dover with the sales innovation paradox, that we've had a lot of innovations in sales. The paradox is we're not necessarily seeing increased productivity. And I have an insight about why we're not seeing increased productivity that we might get to in a little bit.
Well, and I think it's so interesting. It's one of those things where if, you know, you've been around for a while, you'll make the same comments about other things, right? Like if you've, you know, come from an era of opening mail, actual mail that comes to your house, and always getting junk mail and all the crap that you get in the mailbox. And you're like, why do they keep doing it? Because the marginal cost is very low as far as, like, let's just send one more, 10,000 more, 20,000 more, right? Like if we're investing, and it must work. Somebody must respond to it and it must do it. Or the advertisers who sell those advertisements just have to find a new sucker every 3 to 6 months, right, who's willing to invest in something that doesn't actually have a return, right? They have to find a new restaurant that's willing to put out a coupon for a 2-for-1 that no one ever uses. They just have to keep doing that. And I won't even get into my thoughts on like B2B sales enablement tools and all of that stuff that's enabling what you're talking about here. And they've just, the churn they have because of what they have to do, like to find new people. But I think that's what we do. Like you could look at billboards, TV ads, say like, does this ever work? Does anyone ever buy? Like it must, there must be some result for it. And so where do you see that? Like specifically the cold cadence emails, just checking in. I'm not sure if you saw my last 3 emails, moving this to the top of your inbox, just crap, right? Do you see that stopping without regulation from the government?
Okay, or so do you I'm see glad it? That you mentioned that point, because the way I think about that communication is it's pollution. Yeah. It's just basically pollution, right? So the marginal cost to the polluter is terribly low. The marginal cost to the recipient of the person being polluted is actually quite high. I've got to wade through this gump. And I don't know that it's a regulation solution. Maybe it's a technological solution. But I think one possible solution is raising the marginal cost to the polluter. Okay, fine. You want to get into my inbox? I'm okay with that. It'll cost you $10 to get into my inbox, or it'll cost you $100 to get into my inbox. And I guarantee you that you'll get into my inbox and I will actually read your email. I don't know if there's a way around it other than that. I don't think regulation solves the problem, but maybe technology makes the pollution disappear, or technology raises the marginal cost to the polluter. But I really do think of these technological improvements as being almost totally just pollution.
Yeah, and it's interesting because in the consumer world, in the B2C world, the government will, with enough complaints, step up and regulate something, right? Like they will regulate telemarketing and spam and all of the things like that consumers will then go to their government officials and complain about, and then that happens, right? In the business world, it's not regulated that same way. It doesn't matter. It's like B2B is just an open field of do whatever you want and pollute however you want, because it doesn't matter, because it's a business and they're not a human, right? Yeah. And so you don't have that. And it's interesting because I've heard that before, of this whole, like, you know, if you want access into my inbox, it's going to cost you $1, $5, $10. Right. And if you really want to get in front of me and it's worth it to you, pay the toll, right?
I think this is an interesting distinction that you draw, that on the B2C side, maybe we can realistically expect regulation to get rid of the pollution. But on the B2B side, I don't think it'll be regulation. It's probably technology that gets rid of the pollution.
Yeah. And I think then what you have is this kind of arms race of salespeople and companies trying to get to people, and then the buyers using whatever they can to defend themselves and keep their inbox and their voicemail clean from pollution.
Right. Right. Yep. Totally agree with you.
Now, you were talking about the Howard Dover. I know you wanted to expand on that because it's something interesting. So talk a little bit about his book and his work and that paradox, and then kind of your thoughts on it.
So Howard Dover has this really insightful kind of intuition. So he notices that there's been a whole lot of sales technology enhancements over, like, let's say 40, 50 years or so. And then the second piece is, he says, but we don't see these sales and technology enhancements showing up in productivity figures. Like, you know, there's been this incredible ramp up in technology. Why doesn't it show up in sales productivity figures? And my intuition is, you can't just take an old technology and place it into a new technology and place it into an old process and expect to see productivity improvements. Let me give you a concrete physical example. So textile production in the United States was centered around Lowell, Massachusetts, and in the United Kingdom was centered around Manchester. Initially, when those textile factories were produced, they were powered by water power, river power. So almost always based on the bank of a river, there'd be a water wheel turning, and it powers all the equipment inside the machine. Electrification comes along and they go, oh, we don't need the water power anymore. We pull out the water mill and then we electrify all the old engines, all the old machines in all the old places. Almost no productivity enhancement. Because what you did is you took an old technology, water power, and you replaced it with a new technology, electricity, but you kept all the processes the same. So the machines were based exactly where they were used to base, and there'd be these like vertical gears above your machine and what have you. What you need to do to unlock the productivity enhancement is you need to say, okay, blank piece of paper, new technology, new process. And so what I think we've got is we've got this new sales technology that we are bolting on to old sales processes. And you don't see any productivity enhancements. Okay, so part of my sales process is I make a cold call. Okay. And then when I have this cold call, I listen to you and try and ask for an appointment with you, what have you. All right. Now I've got a technology that lets me do 10,000 times more cold calls, but the process is still the same. And so you've strapped a more powerful engine onto an old process and you don't see any productivity improvements. I think what we have to do is we have to fundamentally rethink our processes, our cadences, and our what we're doing to actually unlock the productivity.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I see that too, where if your sales process and your sales fundamentals are either broken or missing or antiquated, right, as far as what buyers want now versus what they used to tolerate, then what happens is no matter what tools you put in place, it's not going to matter. It's not going to work. The analogy I use all the time is you could give me the fanciest golf clubs out there, the most expensive, like, you know, $3,500 for just the irons, like somebody was telling me the other day. That would not help my game. Like my fundamentals are so terrible. Like it does not matter what you give me,
right?
What technology, range find, like I promise it doesn't matter.
Right.
Because just the fundamentals aren't there.
Right. Right.
And so what do you see as the solution for that? Or what do you think companies can do or individuals can do about that, instead of how do I find something that helps me make 10,000 times more calls?
I wish I had an easy answer to this. I don't. I think I'm just, it's going to be, we will discover the answer, and the answer will not look a whole lot like what it used to look like. I'll give you one more analogy. So I'm old enough to remember typing pools. So back in the day, kind of in the late 70s, early 80s, no one had word processors, no one had computers, no one had laptops. That was not a thing that existed. You had a typing pool. It was normally an entire floor. It was normally woman, and you had a document that you would type, wanted typed up, and you go to the typing pool and give them the document and say, please make me 3 copies of this. When laptops and personal computers and desktop computers at work came along, at first, all the typewriters disappeared and every typist had a computer, and productivity didn't go up much until someone said, but hang on, we don't need typists anymore. That entire floor of typists can go and do something else. They can become personal assistants, administrative assistants. The managers can do most of their own typing. It's a new process that doesn't look like the old process at all. So I don't know what the new process is going to look like, but we're going to look back and go, huh, an entire floor of people who just did typing. Oh my gosh, that was stupid. So for example, an entire building of people who just do outbound calls, or an entire building of people who just receive inbound calls. Maybe 10 years from now, we look back and go, huh, that doesn't look like a great use of human capital.
Yeah, and I can see what you mean with that, which is just totally shifting, totally changing, not just modifying, not just, hey, I own a house and we need more space, so let's just keep expanding and adding rooms here and rooms there and rooms here, like just almost like tearing it down and building something from scratch. Right. In a different way that fits the current needs instead of kind of hobbling things together.
And I think kind of going back to this idea of inertia being such a powerful force, I don't think the innovators of the new process are most likely going to be current existing companies. It will be new companies kind of starting up from scratch that aren't bound by legacy processes that will probably be the first companies to show new processes coming up.
Very interesting. Especially because just this morning I had coffee with a friend, and he's doing something similar. Like he's looking at that and coming from a traditional, let's say SDR, BDR type of model. So she is an outsourced company, instead going like, that doesn't work for many reasons, which I won't get into here, but it doesn't work. especially as an outsourced model. And instead, how do you do that relative to what people act like the potential buyers actually want? How do they behave and what will they respond to? And then how do you move them through a process that's more like sniper and less, you know, shotgun or nuclear bomb, as far as like the numbers game, right?
Tell me a little bit more about this kind of outsourced SDR process and why it doesn't work.
I have a
kind of maybe a technology follow on to that.
So the biggest thing that I've seen in all of my experiences with clients and then with also companies trying to do this is that a company gets to a point where they say, I want to outsource my lead gen for my, let's say, B2B company, right? So I want to outsource my SDR, BDR work. And then a company comes along and says, we can do that. That's what we do. We're amazing at it and we're great. The problem I see is that the client who wants to outsource typically doesn't know what it takes to be successful. They don't have processes. They don't have systems. It's not working. They're not going from, we have 10 and this is amazing. Now we need 50. They're going from, I keep hiring 5 and firing 3. We can't get this to work. Maybe you can raise our kids for us, right? And so they're handing off a problem to somebody else who then has to figure it out. That's not a bad thing. The problem is that it takes time to figure out something you've never figured out. Or you can't solve yourself, which means it's going to take 6 to 12 months for someone else to learn what you could never learn. And the company that's hiring them usually doesn't have the time and the patience, because there's people who are saying, why aren't we getting results? And then also the money to hemorrhage for 6 to 12 months while somebody's learning it, and you get 3 demos, one shows up and you don't close it in the first 3 months. It takes time. It can work, but most people don't have the patience.
I'm not going to mention the company. It's a startup, but I want to talk about this company that has taken that model further. So it's kind of like the Uber of SDRs. It's an online platform. So companies looking for lead gen say, we want people to do lead gen for us. We pay you $100 per qualified lead or $1,000, whatever. Here's some online training material. Go and watch our online training, you know, for an hour, 2 hours. At the end of the online training, you've got to do a lead gen call with us. And if you pass, then cool, you're ready to go and start making calls at home, you know, while you're drinking beer or what have you. So that's kind of the one piece. And then the other piece is we need SDRs, lead gen. So, you know, if you're a salesperson and you want to make some extra money in your own time, that's fine. Or in this case, the company reached out to me, and I imagine that they're reaching out to every director of a university sales program saying, we'd like to work with you, having your students do lead gen. Wouldn't it be awesome for them? They get practical experience. So it's that model on steroids. And kind of a couple of things is, how do you do the quality control? How do you ensure that this person is not drunk when they're making the call? Because they don't. So what if they get fired, right? Another piece of like what's really important from SDRs is not that just that they generate leads for you, qualify leads for you, book meetings for account execs, is that they're doing this market sensing function, right? There's information that they learn during these calls that they then pass off onto their account execs or their marketing manager or what have you. And then it's a talent pool. That's where your account execs in the future come from. So kind of it takes this Uber model of like, let me totally atomize everything in the world that I can atomize. Let me break the sales function down into these minute steps. Like it's the Henry Ford model of putting together a car. You don't need to know how to construct a car. It takes no craftsmanship. You don't need any artisanal skills. You just need to know how to do this one thing repeatedly over and over again. It takes that sales process, breaks it down into these very atomized parts, and then subcontracts out every atomized part. In the short term, it can look great. You've moved a whole bunch of cost off your book. You are only paying people for each lead that they generate. Okay, so that's lovely. I'm not carrying overhead. I'm not carrying fixed costs. In the long term, I think it looks horrid the real opportunity to damage a brand and destroy brand equity and not get market sensing and not have these new opportunities to create new products and solutions, because you never hear what the problem is from the customer because you're never speaking to the customer. I think it's one of those kind of like very short-sighted, wow, looks great. Long-term, we look back and go, what were we thinking? That was a really dumb thing to do.
Well, and it's tough, and maybe I'm jaded. Maybe I just see the parts that don't work of it. And I'm sure, you know, I'll get messages, and I would love to, you know, any emails, at least professionally. So emails or LinkedIn messages, anyone who's running an outsourced SDR team and you're doing it amazing and you have long-term clients, please let me know. I would love to find some actual instances. Right. Not just a, hey, we helped a client do this. It's like, but for how long? Not just a short burst, but a long one.
I think there's one company that I know of that does that very well. And one part of their business model is our SDR pool becomes your account execs. So it solves part of that problem. You recruit for your account execs out of our SDR pool. Mm. But it requires working with a relatively small handful of companies who do actually have a good SDR process that you really know and understand.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense. And I do know some people who do a good job. I know companies like, you know, a few that I'm thinking about where they do good work. They hire great people. They have great training. Their technology is amazing. The challenge is really from the buyer side in this case, which is the company hiring this outsourced company, is do they have the understanding, the patience, and the tolerance for how long it takes to get results, right? And usually they say they do. They're like, yeah, we're good for 6 months. This is fine. But after 2 months, the sales team is saying, wait a second, where's all our appointments? And why aren't they closing? And why are we spending money on this? And then the people just run out of the desire to make that successful. So the question would be is what's the solution to this? And I think, you know, it's that more specific model, you know, something different than the standard, like you said, the 10 email, just checking in cadence sequence, you know, with a calendar link in it, like, hey, let's book a time. It's like, you don't know me. And absolutely not. Right. I'm definitely not doing that, as I get those all the time. It's fascinating and fun. What do you see like on this conversation that we were just talking about, which is so fun, is where do you see, you know, the future for salespeople, especially fitting in with all of this?
This is hard. I don't know what the answer is to this. So one of the things that I want to talk about is AI, and I think we've probably got this on kind of on the sequence. So everyone is thinking about AI right now, and everyone is thinking about AI in sales. There was this great sales conference in academic sales conference in Toronto just very, very recently, and kind of almost everyone was thinking about AI and what is AI doing in sales. And let me just say that right now, we don't know a whole lot very well. I do want to point to one piece of research, so kind of really strong, rigorous academic research that was published earlier this year in the Academy of Management Journal. So they worked with a telemarketing center, and they did this experiment where half of the telemarketers got to work with an AI and the other half didn't. And the results are incredibly powerful. They show that AI approximately doubles the number of sales. Now, what was interesting is when you break down that doubling in sales by people who were already strong salespeople before they were given the opportunity to work with AI versus those who were not so strong before they were given the opportunity to work with AI, at least in this instance, maybe it's not universally true, it was the high performers who benefited more from AI. They got more benefit out of AI, whereas the low performers got less benefit out of AI. I think, you know, it's kind of easy to go to doom and gloom and go, all sales jobs will disappear. I don't think that's true. I think AI is definitely going to replace some sales jobs. And then for some sales jobs, it's going to become a supplement. So call centers, especially if it's kind of a very standard, easy inbound call that you have people who've answered those calls many, many times. In other words, you've got a large corpus of calls that you can train the LLM on. those jobs go, and they go quickly. And probably outbound calls too will also go, although maybe not as quickly. But complex
makes sales, total sense.
Yeah, complex sales. And AI is not going to track a complex sales deal over 18 months, discovering who's in the buying center and identifying the champion. That's not happening anytime soon. What might be happening is that the salesperson working on that deal has an AI that is coaching her through the deal, saying, hey, I keep noticing, for example, that this one person gets copied on all the emails. And based on the pattern of communications that I've seen, I think this person is the decision maker, and here's my suggested route to get to them, for example. And here's how you might communicate with them. Those kinds of things, you know, we're seeing already a lot. There's a company, XIQ Inc., if I'm remembering correctly. So one of the things that they do, for example, is they do proposed communications, that they suggest communications generated by an AI, depending on who you're responding to. So they'll scrape the web for your respondent's social media presence and any other communications that they can find. And they can, and then they'll say, all right, based on what we're seeing, we think this person is a driver, and how you want to communicate with them on this topic. Here's a template, here's a script. And you probably don't, if especially if you're a high-performing salesperson, you don't just press the send button, but you go, huh, yeah, that's a great starting point, and let me make these couple of customizations and tweaks. And so you see mammoth productivity increases for that group of salespeople doing that kind of sales role.
I love it. And I could totally see that, right? Like, again, it's always that new technology in a space and who's going to be affected and who's not, right? Like, you know, anything in industrial age and with computers and the internet in general. And like, even what you're saying about the typing pool, when, you know, desktop computers became a thing, it's like, oh my gosh, what is going to happen to all those people? It's like, well, they're going to go do something else, be productive in a better way, different way, something more valuable than what they were doing right with the rudimentary XYZ.
Which is not to say that, you know, in that transition process, there's not going to be a lot of pain. I think if you're working in a call center, I mean, I hate to say this, the very high probability that you lose your job in the next year or two. And how do you help those people transition into something else that might be more meaningful and more productive?
Yeah. And, you know, for people who are listening to this, maybe they might thinking, okay, well, am I going to lose my job? Am I at risk for that? The best thing you can do is just get better and better and put yourself in a position to be of more or different value than what you're doing in your company now or elsewhere, right? Like there's always opportunities that the latest technology, air quotes technology, because again, it could be electricity, right, back in the day, but the latest technology cannot replace and it cannot do what you could do. And so I think that's always important. Last question on this, what do you see for the future of sales programs at universities or for yours specifically?
So they're going to become even more widespread. I think I can't imagine a situation where a couple of years from now, you don't have every single business school having a sales center. It's just so many of students find their first placement in a sales role, training students, you know, preparing them for that role will just happen more and more. We'll think of sales increasingly as a profession that you choose to go into as opposed to something that you fall into by accident. Working with industry in some way is going to be a central piece of sales centers. They will not be academically isolated where you just lecture a textbook and nothing else happens. The best sales centers will really work closely with industry. They'll have corporate partners who are supporting them financially. They'll have corporate partners who are sharing their experience, talent, and expertise, and they will have corporate partners who are hiring out of those programs. and then technology. So in our sales program, you know, despite this earlier challenge that I was telling you with actually procuring a dialing platform, we use technology. And we train our students how to use this technology just for, you know, kind of our purposes. And I suspect this is true in many universities. I want the technology to live with our partner that we're working with, as opposed to living with us. So students will be well-rounded in the basics of the sales process. They'll have done a lot of practices, exercises that build up that memory muscle of riding the bicycle, whether it's role-playing face-to-face, whether it's role-playing with an artificial intelligence, which is what we do. We use the Rainmakers technology to teach our intro class the basics of the sales process. They'll be connected to industry. They'll have built up a network before they graduate. And so when they graduate, they're ready to ramp up much more quickly than a student who didn't want to go into sales because it's a disgusting, inauthentic career and accidentally falls into sales and has to learn how to do it through trial and error.
I love it. And I'm excited for all of those things to happen, what you're working on now and the future. And, you know, for it to be widespread, I think it's so important. I think one of the biggest things I've learned from you and the other professors, you know, professional sales educators that I've been talking to, especially for the podcast, is how it's just so fundamental in any role, in anything that someone's going to go do, or even, you know, maybe they're going to go work at a company and they're going to be a buyer. It's like, now you understand sales and what it should look like from a sales perspective. And it makes you a better buyer. It makes you better in all aspects. And so I'm excited for that, especially as a guy with a marine biology degree that absolutely didn't want to deal with people and only wanted to deal with sharks, having fallen into sales and kind of learning it through trial and error my whole life from then on. Like, I think it's amazing to be teaching people and setting them up for success moving forward. Any final thoughts? Anything else come to mind when we talk about the future?
I love what I do. I'm really passionate about that intersection of sales and education. I love researching sales. I love teaching students how to sell. It's just, it's a great, great thing. And you should do what makes you happy. And I think for me, what makes me happy in the long term is helping people succeed. And what I hope for the generation of sales students that I have educated and that I'll continue to educate is that they will do something that makes them happy. And part of that is the ability to look back and go, wow, I helped a lot of people solve their problems.
That's awesome. Final question. One more thing that came to mind. Now, what does your dean and the other professors who didn't want sales to be taught, where are they at now with you in the program?
I think they love the success of the program. They just see where we're placing our students, the kinds of companies and positions that we're placing our students. They see how much the students speak about the sales program and how much the students love the sales program. My colleagues love the sales program, and I'm so happy and thankful for that.
And the dean is happy?
We are actually in the process of searching for a dean. So we're kind of we have an interim dean at the moment. So I'm going to have to do my sales job all over again when the new dean arrives.
There you go. Well, I know you'll be successful, especially now that you have a track record of not, yes, hey, give me a chance and I'll prove it. It's here's what I've done and I've proven it. And just, you know, semi stay out of my way and let me keep doing what I'm doing. Because again, like you said, you know, in the beginning, it's not even mean. It's, you know, you're covering the program with outside funds. You don't need the university, like to fund it. You just want the space to do it and the support, which I think is amazing. And I love, you know, again, this is why I enjoy chatting with you so much. If people can tell, is that I know that you love it. All the professors that I've had on here, you can tell that they're in a place that they love it and that is so good for them and for, you know, for you, for your students. And I agree, life is too short to do things that you don't like, yes. You know, and find that place where you enjoy it. It's not always easy. It's not struggle or challenge free, but do you like it more than not? And if so, and you know, it's a part of the process, then stay with it. So I love that. Dr. Dimitri, thanks for being here. For people who want to connect with you, now that we've gone through all this, they want to pick your brain about maybe the future of sales or any of that, or, you know, ask you questions or follow up with you. They can connect with you on LinkedIn, also the University of New Mexico Center for Sales and Business Development website. Both of the links will be in the show notes. I'm fully expecting some emails or some responses from outsourced SDR companies who think they're amazing. And I look forward to that. And I actually open to it. I would love there to be a solution for this. It's just really about where that intersection is. And again, Dr. Dimitri, thanks for being on here and sharing so much with the audience.
Jason, thank you so much for the opportunity. It was a real pleasure chatting with you.
I loved it. And hopefully everybody who was tuning in, if you loved it, please make sure to share this, like this content. I don't say that a lot because I know this just grows organically, but one of the biggest things, you know, my mission is to fill the world with authentic persuaders. And the way we do that is these kind of programs, not just the podcast. I mean, like Dr. Dimitri's programs and the way that people learn about sales and shift from the transactional growth side to, even if it's transactional, but it's value-based and relationships and solving problems. It's okay to be transactional salesperson. It's just about the intent and what are you doing and how are you going about it. And I think that's what, if we can all do our part to share and change and put more content out there, then it's going to change and we're going to win. And as always, until the next episode, next conversation that we have together, thank you for being here and for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.